from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line.
Those mid swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go.
Let's go.
On a Tuesday evening, we welcome you in. It is time for another Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly, taking you for the next couple hours till 8 o'clock this evening. We've got a lot to get to here on the program. A couple guests are going to be with us. Later on this hour, we're going to talk with somebody who used to cover Mizzou Athletics, and we had on the program on occasion in Matt Stahl. He's now part of the team that covers Alabama sports for the folks at the Alabama newspaper, Alabama AL.com is the website, and what is that newspaper? Anyways, we'll talk with them, AL.com, Alabama.com. He'll talk with us. SEC football coming up later on this hour, and then also next hour, we'll head out to Kansas City. We got a few things to talk about out there. The big story of the moment is what's happening in Seattle, where the Blues are just about set to wrap up their season opener, and what at one point appeared to be a tough start to the season has turned into, in all likelihood, knock on wood. We'll get back to you on this in about 42 seconds as the game is wrapping up, and we'll tell you if and when it goes final of where it's at right now. But the Blues do have a 3-2 lead on Seattle, and there is about 42 seconds to go, and the Blues are facing off against six attackers as Seattle has pulled their goalie. So again, we'll keep you updated. What's interesting about this game, and we have not talked as much Blues on this show as I would have liked leading into the season. Just obviously everything going on with the Cardinals has impacted things, and we've talked mostly Cardinals baseball here recently. I'm not high on this Blues team. I'm just not. I want to be wrong. There are times where I'm glad that I'm right, and there's times that I'm glad that I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong on this Blues team, and I might be because I get stuff wrong fairly often, if I'm wrong on this Blues team, I will be incredibly happy to be wrong. Because I think they're better than they were last year, but I don't think they were especially good last year. I continue to question if they've got the right character in the guys who are leading the way. I look at a bunch of leaders that largely got Craig Berube fired, and I continue to have questions about this team. One game doesn't make a season, that's for sure, but I have been pleasantly surprised by what I have seen in this game, because when it got started, I think they got outshot 11-6 in the first period, and Jordan Binnington stopped everything that he saw in the first period. Second period got started, and what happens? Seattle scores two quick goals. They score two goals in the first 2 minutes and 20 seconds of the second period, and the shots were just way out of hand in terms of being in favor of Seattle. And I looked at it, and again, I'm not somebody who's going to say that that represents what the entire season's going to be, but it's also kind of what I'm in many ways expecting out of this team, where they don't score enough goals and defensively just not good enough. And then, and to their credit, and I think there's two keys for the Blues team. I think Jordan Kyrou has to score a lot of goals, and I think defensively they have to limit shots, and it is final, by the way. The Blues have opened up the season with a really good win at Seattle, 3-2. They have to stop. They have to play strong defense, and I don't know if they've got the personnel to be a strong defensive team. They need defensemen to really step up, and they need Jordan Kyrou to have a huge season. So what has happened in this game? So after Seattle got out to that 2-0 lead, scoring the two goals in the first 2 minutes and 20 seconds of the second period, and then no scoring for about 10 more minutes after that, and then all of a sudden, just a flurry of goals for the Blues, led by Jordan Kyrou, who scores a power play goal to make it 2-1. Then Philip Broberg scores. That makes it 2-2. And then Jordan Kyrou scores a second goal to make it 3-2. Those three goals are all scored in less than 3 minutes. The Blues take the 3-2 lead, and to their credit, they hold on for a 3-2 win. So whatever clicked in after they got down 2-0 in the second period, whatever clicked in during that period, it worked because the Blues were much better. Even the saves or the shots on goal, it's not great. They gave up 32 shots while getting 25 onto the Seattle goal, but they were on pace for giving up over 40 shots. So the fact that Seattle only got 32 shots on goal really show that the Blues improved defensively as the game went along. And then Jordan Kyrou did what he can do because he's got as much skill, he's got more skill than anybody on the roster in terms of the ability to put the puck in the net. And he did that in a flurry twice, and the Blues end up winning. And these are the kind of games, again, I'm not trying to make too much out of the first game of the season, but these are the kind of games that they're going to have to steal if they want to go out and find themselves in playoff contention a few months down the line. So that's a good start. That's a good start for this Blues team. You're a little worried when they're opening up the season with three straight games on the road out west. After today's game, they're going to head to San Jose to take on the Sharks on Thursday night, and then they'll play in Vegas on Friday night. They'll get the weekend off, and they'll open up the home portion of their schedule coming up on Tuesday when they welcome in the Minnesota Wild. So they get points out of this opening road trip. They get a win in their first game of the year. That's pretty good all the way around. Hopefully we'll be able to get some audio from head coach Drew Bannister and play that for you later on in the program if we're able to get that from Seattle. But that's a good win. That's a good win. So I like it when, again, just one game, but I like it when I'm wrong on things like these. I was not feeling great about this team, and then they're down 2-0, and it just kind of felt like what I felt like the season was going to feel like. And That was a really good flurry, and they win this game thanks to a flurry of goals over a three-minute period and then shoring up their defense. And defensively, if they can continue to do some version of what they did over the last, 30 or so minutes of this game, that's going to go a long way towards them coming away with a victory. All right, when we come back, I want to talk a little baseball. The baseball playoffs are continuing on. We also, I really think that payroll for the Cardinals this upcoming season is very much tied to the local media, local TV situation. And some things happened today in baseball that may or may not give an indication of what's going to happen from a TV standpoint with the Cardinals. And I know people are interested about the TV thing because they want to know where they can watch the games. Rightfully so, but the TV thing also is going to impact the amount of money that the Cardinals have to spend on payroll next year. So we're going to get into that coming up in just a moment, and the development that we saw today. It's a pretty big one across Major League Baseball. Doesn't directly impact the Cardinals, but it might have some impact. We'll explain that coming up in just a moment. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Great to have you with us throughout the course of the next hour and 40 minutes. We take you till 8 o'clock tonight, taking you till 8 o'clock most nights. We'll have a full show tomorrow as well, and on Friday, then we'll have you for just about 30 minutes or so on Thursday, because we'll have Thursday night football coming up from Westwood One Sports. All right, so somewhat big news today, and this, for the moment, does not directly impact the Cardinals, but it does signal the continued changes in TV media rights when it comes to Major League Baseball teams. Because we talked about it last week when Diamond Sports Group, the group that oversees and has ownership of the Bally Sports Regional Sports Channels, when in a bankruptcy hearing last week, they essentially said that outside of the Atlanta Braves, they were not going to honor the deals, the contracts that they had with the rest of their various major league partners. So the Cardinals are in the middle of a very long deal with Diamond, with Bally, which unfortunately for the Cardinals, it was a very much a backloaded deal. So with Diamond filing for bankruptcy and basically being able to get out from underneath the liabilities of this contract that they signed, it really does hit the Cardinals in a bad way, because when they initially signed this contract, they signed it in a way that the money was going to be going up in not exponentially, but almost exponentially as it went along, and they're not going to be able to see the big time money coming in off this contract. They're going to probably have to figure out something different. Now, is there a scenario where the Cardinals are back on Bally Sports Midwest next year? Absolutely, that's a possibility. I was just reading a couple days ago that the Miami Marlins have already started to renegotiate with the Bally Florida folks, and it seems like the Marlins are likely to be back on Bally Sports next year. So Bally Sports as a whole is not completely going away, and there are opportunities for teams to renegotiate these deals. That's not going to happen in Cleveland. That's not going to happen in Milwaukee. That's not going to happen in Minnesota. And that's not going to happen in Texas. Well, Arlington. So what was announced today, Major League Baseball announced that they are going to produce and distribute the local TV games next year for the Cleveland Guardians, the Milwaukee Brewers, and the Minnesota Twins. What this actually means is it's going to look very similar to what's happening right now in San Diego and Arizona, and I believe Colorado as well. But San Diego and Arizona were the first teams where this happened. So in those markets, those broadcasts, those game broadcasts are available on terrestrial cable like you might have, but Major League Baseball was also able to work out deals with like YouTube TV and Hulu Live TV and DirecTV Stream and Fubo and all those. I think they got deals done with just about every television carrier or television streaming service to be able to put the games on. Essentially, what happens is for the cable systems, it's just a blank channel. So it's not that they created a channel in San Diego, Arizona. They're not providing programming. It's just a blank channel. And then when it's time for those games, it goes live and they've got them there. So it'd be like if Bally Sports Midwest had nothing on it until 6:30 at night when all of a sudden the Cardinals pregame show starts. In addition to that, there is going to be a direct-to-consumer option available, and the pricing for that in Arizona and San Diego has been $20 a month just to get your team, $100 for the season, or you can get the entire MLB TV package where you get every game, including your own team, and I think it's like $200 for the year. So that's what's going to happen in Cleveland, Milwaukee, and Minnesota. Major League Baseball is going to produce those games through the facilities of MLB Network. They will then distribute them to the various cable providers, and they will also provide a direct-to-consumer streaming option. So if you're somebody who has not been able to stream games locally, you will be able to do that moving forward. So that's what's going to happen there. The Texas Rangers, they have announced that they are also going to break away from Diamond, that they are not going to be on their local Bally Sports next year, but they have not announced what they are going to do. They are still considering all broadcast options. So what does this mean for the Cardinals? I think in all likelihood, it probably indicates that the Cardinals are likely to go in the same direction that the Texas Rangers are going. I don't know this for sure, but I look at Cleveland, Milwaukee, and Minnesota, and I'm not trying to be dismissive of any of those markets, but they're mid-sized markets, and yes, St. Louis is a mid-sized market too. I'm not trying to overstate that, but the audience there is different, because the Cardinals audience is going to be, it's much more than the St. Louis metro area. There is much more of an audience for Cardinals baseball than there is for Cleveland Guardians baseball, Milwaukee Brewers baseball, and I think Minnesota Twins baseball as well. I look at what was announced by the Texas Rangers as being more likely with what's going to happen with the Cardinals, because the Rangers announced that they're breaking away from Bally, but that they are considering other local media options. The Rangers are in a bigger market. They've got more eyes that are going to be interested in their games. Even though the Cardinals aren't in a bigger market, they do have more eyes that are going to be interested in the games because of really how many markets they penetrate into. So my guess at this point is that the Cardinals will probably break away from Bally. Not a guarantee. Those games could be back on Bally next year. I don't think this is going to change anything with the broadcasters. I always get asked that question. I would expect all the broadcasters to be the same. I think the broadcast will feel the same. The graphics might look a little bit different, but that would be it. But I still think everything is on the table. Maybe they do go to kind of like what Cleveland, Milwaukee, and Minnesota are doing, where Major League Baseball produces those games. That's a possibility. Maybe they find a local TV outlet that can run the games in St. Louis while they also provide the same streaming options where anybody can go pick up the games via streaming. And but no matter what happens, the revenue that the Cardinals are going to bring in, and this is the same in Cleveland, this is the same in Milwaukee, and this is the same in Minnesota, I would expect payroll to go down in Cleveland, Milwaukee, and Minnesota. Minnesota dropped payroll coming in this year, and they're pretty disappointed with the way things went. Maybe they are a little bit embarrassed, and they go back in the other direction. But I think in just about every Bally market, we're going to see payroll go down. Cardinals have already announced payroll going down. Quite honestly, if the Cardinals are going to kind of reboot things the way they're trying to do with player development, this is a really good year to do it, because you are probably going to drop payroll as a result of the TV situation anyways. So you'll let that kind of stabilize. You'll figure out what it's going to look like moving forward, what kind of revenue you're going to be able to create from whatever the TV situation is moving forward. But there is just so much unrest. And look, the local TV money matters. It matters a lot, especially in St. Louis. It matters a lot. But let's not also forget that the amount of money that Major League Baseball is bringing in from their national TV deals, from their deals with gambling entities. The market could very much change in St. Louis if sports gambling is legalized when it comes up on the ballot here in a month or so. There's a lot of moving parts right now, but the announcement that was made today, again, doesn't specifically involve the Cardinals, but I think you can look at this and start to see how it could impact the Cardinals moving forward. And again, we know that payroll is going to go down. We just don't know how much it's going to go down, and that might be largely impacted by what the TV situation looks like. If the Cardinals are able to work out some type of deal where a local provider comes in and wants to put those games on TV and are willing to pay big money for it, probably not as much money as Bally was going to pay, but big money, while the Cardinals still have the opportunity to provide the games as a streaming service to fans, and that's going to create revenue as well. Maybe salary doesn't go down quite as much as it could be, but if they go into a situation that's just what Cleveland, Milwaukee, and Minnesota are going into, it could be, the result could definitely be a significant reduction in salary. Now, I say all that, if all these teams are reducing salary, then where's the teams that are going to pick up salary, right? Like, for you to reduce salary, you have to shed payroll. Well, that means somebody else has to pick up payroll. If you're going to trade Sonny Gray or Wilson Contreras or Nolan Arenado, them dropping off your payroll, somebody else is going to have to pick it up. And if every Bally market in baseball is trying to shed salary, there's only going to be so many teams out there that are going to be adding payroll. So it becomes challenging. It definitely does become challenging at some point in time. All right, we are going to take a break. And when we return, we are going to talk with Matt Stahl. He covers Alabama football, Alabama athletics for the folks at AL.com. He'll be with us in just a moment or so. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
We are back at it, taking until 8 o'clock this evening. As always, if you want to chime in, 314-436-7900. Something rather remarkable, not just in college football, but in the world of sports, happened this past weekend when Vanderbilt of all teams, beat Alabama. And with that, we're very happy to welcome on an old friend. He used to cover the University of Missouri. Now he is covering Alabama sports for AL.com. He is Matt Stahl. You follow him on Twitter at Matt, STAHL97. Matt, appreciate you taking some time with us. Good to hear from you again.
Oh, yeah. No, thanks for having me. Good to be back on again.
What's it like in Tuscaloosa on the days following Alabama losing to Vanderbilt?
Well, you know, the sun keeps coming up, so I guess the town's going to make it. But, you know, it seems like people aren't handling it well, or I guess are handling it about as well as you would expect, given that, I mean, you can say it again, Alabama lost to Vanderbilt, which is insane. So, yeah, I mean, getting critiques from everything on, you know, defensive scheme to what Kalen DeBoer was wearing during the game.
Well, what a wild 8 days to go in and beat Georgia, and the way that Georgia game went down where they got out to such a big lead and you're going, is this real? And then Georgia gets back in it, but Alabama makes plays down the stretch. And then 7 days later, they're losing to Vanderbilt. I mean, that is from a mountain's top to a low of the valley. It's hard to think of a team experiencing more in 8 days.
No, yeah, it's been crazy. And if you back up, it's been a crazy several months in Alabama. I mean, you can go back to before the Georgia game. Their last regular season SEC game was the 4th-and-31 Iron Bowl at Auburn. So, I mean, just, yeah, crazy stuff, obviously. I mean, you're going to see here, I guess, how Kalen DeBoer can kind of handle the highs and the lows with the team. I mean, they've had both of them here real recently.
I mean, is the honeymoon for Kalen DeBoer officially over?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's one of those things where if you had told Alabama fans coming into the season you're going to be 4-1, like, I think they'd have been okay with it just because, you know, they assume they lose the Georgia game to what was probably going to be the number one team in the country at that point. But, I mean, you know, I've said this a million times. They lost to Vanderbilt. Like, nobody, like, the coaches before Nick Saban weren't doing that. They hadn't done that since 1984. Like, he's lost to the one team that it's unforgivable to lose to at Alabama.
Well,
and, yeah, we'll see how this goes going forward.
There's been some comparison to Nick Saban's first year. Was it Louisiana Monroe or one of those teams that they lost to? But very different when you look at the talent that was on the field for Nick Saban in year one and Kalen DeBoer in year one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, 2007, Nick Saban loses to ULM. I mean, there's conspiracy theorists that think he sort of sandbagged that game, but, you know, I don't necessarily believe any of that. But you are right. I mean, it was such a different roster at the time. The recruiting had slipped a little bit. Alabama wasn't necessarily even thinking nationally recruiting at that time. Like, you have to think 2006, it was a lot different as far as, like, finding talent. Like, the internet wasn't what it is now as far as being able to just instantly see highlights from everybody on earth. So, yeah, much less talented roster compared to this season where you're supposed to have, I mean, national champion caliber roster. And, you know, Vanderbilt has the guys they could convince to get to come to Vanderbilt and then could get into school. Like, it's just not a game you should be losing.
Has this had any recruiting impact? Because, I mean, that's just the negativity that has existed. Generally, teams lose games, and they just kind of lose games. The national attention that this one single game has gotten, has that had any recruiting impact so far?
No, not so far. You know, I think Kalen DeBoer has, and I'll give him a ton of credit for this, like, really, really kept up the recruiting. I think if you look at the 247 rankings now, they're the number two class in the country coming in this year behind Ohio State, which obviously all that's subject to change at any time. But, you know, based on the recruits I've seen, like, everybody's still on board. And obviously, I mean, if this Alabama team just completely crashes out, you might see some change there. And if there's a lot of, you know, turnover on coaching staff, anything like that would cause more of a issue. But, you know, it doesn't seem like they're recruiting a lot of kids who are going to make their choices based on one game. And also, they had a lot of those kids in the building last week when they beat Georgia in the thriller. So, you know, it's their recruiting's still solid for now.
Does Alabama have real issues, or do you chalk that up as just a really weird game and a really weird weekend?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, the biggest issue, I mean, the defense just looked unprepared. And I think there, you know, there's enough talent on that defense that I think you can kind of coast in some games. But when you're playing a team like Vanderbilt, you know, I've said this for years. I've said this in reference to Missouri before Eli Drinkwitz got things going there. Like, one of these woebegone SEC programs should start running some sort of, like, an option offense.
Mm-hmm.
just to do what, you know, Georgia Southern used to do to teams, where, like, it's really, really hard to play the option once a year. just because, like, it's nothing that you've prepared for anywhere else all season. So it was some of that with Vanderbilt. There were some fluke elements. I mean, the winning points kind of come back to a pick six that bounced off somebody's helmet and, like, 15 feet into the air. So, you know, you get that play back, maybe we're having a different conversation. But, I mean, that defense looked unprepared, and that can't happen going forward.
I spent 6 years covering Air Force football, and you would see very talented teams just have no clue what to do against that Air Force offense.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I've said for years, it's Missouri, you know, one of the Mississippi schools, like Vanderbilt. Somebody should try it. It evens out your talent sort of in the same way that some of the air raid stuff Josh Heupel has done through the years does.
You covered Mizzou for quite some time. Just before we get you out of here, I'm sure you have thoughts on what's going on there, where their first two games against lesser opponents, they were dominant. They didn't give up a point. Then all of a sudden you start to see some blemishes, but they still got wins against Boston College and Vanderbilt, and Boston College was a top 25 team. And then they go to Texas A&M, and those blemishes that you saw in those last two games become just full-out problems, and they just get run off the field by Texas A&M. How do you feel about what's going on right now in Columbia?
You know, it seemed like they lost a lot of talent on defense through the offseason. You know, you lose Blake Baker. I don't think you could take that lightly either. But, you know, it just seems like they haven't quite been there with the explosive offense that you'd expect Mizzou to have, given the wide receiving core and having Brady Cook back. And, you know, they don't have Cody Schrader on that team anymore either, which, you know, I think they miss him. But, you know, beyond that, they ran into a very, very competent Texas A&M team, too, like one that was going to take advantage of every mistake. So, yeah, we'll see going forward, I think, there.
I do wonder if this schedule legitimately allows them to get into the college football playoff outside of a win against Alabama. Because even if they win out the schedule outside, if they lose to Alabama, which I think they're likely to do in Tuscaloosa, there's no guarantee that Oklahoma is going to be ranked when they play them later in the season. Oklahoma has a tough schedule in front of them, and they're at number 18. Those are the two ranked teams left on the schedule. There's a scenario where Mizzou goes 10-2 and just getting run off the field by Texas A&M is such a big thing that they're on the outside looking in.
Yeah, you see it with a few of the teams this year, because Ole Miss also has a really, like, fairly, I guess, what you would call an easy schedule in the SEC, where, you know, had they been back in the SEC West and Mizzou was back in the SEC East, there would be these, like, guaranteed, like, games against pretty tough opponents that you would have that would really boost your strength of schedule. But, I mean, you kind of saw it with Georgia last year. I think Missouri might sort of fall into the same scenario, right, where Georgia got that game against Oklahoma canceled because they were joining the SEC and they want to play it as a non-conference game. So when they lose to Alabama and that's their first loss of the year, like, the rest of their strength of schedule is so rough that they make the 14 playoff. And, you know, if Mizzou drops another one, yeah, you're right. It could sort of be that same scenario, but in the 12 team.
Is this the argument to get one more league game on the schedule in the SEC so teams have one more opportunity to have a big, big opponent?
Yeah, it's probably more than that. I think it's more of a, like, you gotta get some of these teams' rivalries on the schedule every single year. Just, like, some way to guarantee that everybody's going to see some quality opponents through the years. And, you know, you never know. Like, I remember there were years where, like, the Pac-12 would just completely cannibalize itself with all of its good teams beating each other. And, you know, maybe that's where the SEC kind of is getting at this point, where, like, if there's not a one dominant presence in the league, maybe they run into issues with teams just kind of, like, eating each other alive here.
Yeah, but my pushback on that is that ESPN's not going to let that happen. Like, they will always, as long as this college football playoff exists and as long as you've got top teams from the SEC, they're going to do everything in their power to make sure that multiple SEC teams have a pathway in.
No, you're right, and I could yell about ESPN's influence on the sport all day, but... Yeah, no, I think that's really fair. I don't think, you saw it last year. Like, I'll say it on St. Louis radio, and I don't know that I'd necessarily say it on Tuscaloosa radio. Florida State should have been in last season. Like, it's bogus that they weren't. They got sort of cheated by ESPN or whoever's making that call. So, Yeah, you know, you're right. ESPN will have its SEC teams in there. It'll have its Big Ten teams in there. God forbid they start getting a bunch of auto bids, it'll get even worse.
Absolutely. Well, Matt, great to talk to you. It's awesome to see you continuing to do well covering Alabama, and hopefully we can continue to chat with you every once in a while.
Absolutely, anytime.
Awesome, very good. That's Matt Stahl, part of the team at AL.com, covers the Crimson Tide based out of Tuscaloosa. Some of the audio that resulted out of that Alabama game is just wild. We're going to play some of it for you coming up in just a moment. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
So I realize I'm doing a sports radio show in St. Louis, and I don't want to make this a show nothing but the fact that Vanderbilt beat Alabama. But I was actually explaining to my wife today, like, how notable this was and how much of a like a national sports story it was. And some of the audio that came out of it was just wild. I want to play some of it for you. This audio is courtesy of ESPN and the Paul Feinbaum Show. A caller, his name is Legend, called in, did a six-minute diatribe about Alabama losing to Vanderbilt. I'm not going to play for you, obviously, the entire 6 minutes, but I'll play 41 seconds where this is what he compares Kalen DeBoer to as a result of Alabama losing to Vanderbilt.
This is equivalent to coming home and finding your wife in bed with the neighbor. This is what this is equivalent to, Paul. And I say this for this. Me and K-Dub both agree. You could never trust her again. You might stay with her for the kids' sake, but you could never trust her. And the same thing's true with Coach DeBoer. You can win a natty. We can't trust your ass now. You just proved that you can beat the best and lose to the worst in a two-week friggin' period. You don't lose to Vanderbilt. That's the ugliest little sister on the block. You don't lose to Vanderbilt. You just don't friggin' do it, dude.
The audio courtesy of ESPN and the Paul Feinbaum Show. He did 6 minutes of that. Just classic. Lane Kiffin, the Ole Miss football coach, he's in the middle of his press conference after their game on Saturday. There's a TV in the press room. He stops his press conference and says this.
How many timeouts does Alabama have? One left.
They had all three of them.
They have one left, 118. All right. Sorry, I didn't. I mean, this is like a once-in-a-lifetime thing going on. Better watch. You're not going to see it probably ever again.
That was right in the middle of the Lane Kiffin press conference. And then it even impacts Saturday Night Live. Nate Bargatze, who's just a hilarious comedian, hosted SNL on Saturday night. When they're doing the end of it and he's doing all the thank yous, and he is from he's from Nashville. He's from Tennessee. I think he lives in Nashville. He's from Tennessee. This is what he had to say. So Vanderbilt beat Alabama, made it on to the end of SNL on Saturday night. That's just some of the amazing audio that came out as a result of Alabama losing to Vanderbilt on Saturday, which is why. By the way, I know this is a sports show. Quick sidebar on SNL. I try to watch SNL as much as possible. I am amazed by how different the show can be based off who the host is. So Nate was on last year, and it was like the one really funny episode of SNL. And then this year on the season premiere, it was terrible. I forget the name of the person who was hosting. And then Nate's on, and I'm thinking, okay, this is probably going to be funny. And it was. Those writers, I guess they write very exclusively for whoever the host is going to be. It's crazy that SNL can have such a... from 1 week to the next, can be really funny or not funny just based on who's hosting. So, yeah, it was actually funny this past. Generally, I feel like I don't get the jokes because I'm too old for it. I'm 42. I should not be too old for jokes on SNL, but I feel that way very often. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.